Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. My name is Kevin Salinas.
And I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Adze. Here with some wonderful guests today. Very excited to get into this. Today we are talking about welcoming initiatives. And we have two great guests, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
I am Lucia Myers, and I am from La Conexión. I'm executive director.
And I am Michelle Zaru. I am with Welcome Toledo Lucas County. I'm chair of the advisory committee.
Lucia, can you tell us a little bit about you?
So I grew up in an area in Southern California called Barrio Logan, which is, at the time, it was considered a working class neighborhood. There was a lot of gang activity. There were some racial tensions, but I felt safe because I was raised with my community, like Latinos, African-Americans, some Asian-American families, but it was mainly predominantly African-American and Latinos in the neighborhood. So,
and you're in Southern California?
Yes, San Diego, actually.
In San Diego. Okay, I was just recently in California for a Latino conference. And their Latino culture in California is very different than our Latino culture here in Northwest Ohio.
Yes, actually, when I moved here, it was like, you know, when you move to another or foreign country or you go visit, you have culture shock. I had culture shock moving from California to Ohio. And that was just, I was just literally like, ¿dónde está mi gente? Like, where are my people? Like,
yes.
And there's small pockets of us everywhere. It's just, it's so rural where I live that it's just hard to find community.
What year did you move to Ohio?
I moved to Ohio December 7th, 2014, actually. I came with no illusions.
Oh, not too long ago.
About 11 years ago. And I had visited before because of my partner's from a small village in Ohio. Mm. And I had no illusions coming. I wanted to come in December because of the fact that I didn't want to come in the summer when it was nice and sunny and warm. Uh-huh. We came in the middle of, you know, or what you'd consider the beginning of winter. So
what do you consider yourself? So I go to California and everybody over there that looks like me considers themselves Chicanos or Chicana. You know, this is big. And then their big thing is to ask me what generation I am. We never ask those questions here in Northwest Ohio.
No, we don't
say, what generation are you? Yeah. You know?
So, yes. That's
weird.
That is a good thing because where I grew up, there is a park called Chicano Park. And there's a long history. There's a lot of culture in the barrio. And so, yeah, it was more like the question never was, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and then you say, oh, I'm from San Diego.
Right.
The question never came, where are you really from? Uh-huh. It was, you know, where you would say, okay, well, my parents are from Mexico. The question was, like you said, like, it is Chicana or Latina, Mexicana? You know, like, so how do you define yourself without having to label yourself? So for me, for a long time, I had a identity crisis where I would say I was Chicana Latina. And then I would just try to say, oh, I would play up my Filipino side more. Oh, I'm Asian because of the fact that I was brought up in a mixed cultural family.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't define myself. But as I grew older, I had come to embrace myself. I do consider myself a Chicana, but also a Latina.
Yeah.
On the broader spectrum of being a Latina.
Yeah, I'm that same way. But there are some people that believe you can't, you can't be, like I like to do, Latinx and Chicana. You can't be Latinx and Chicana, you know? But to me, I feel like being Chicana is actually a generational piece.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, that not too many people would use it. Like, I don't know if Kevin would call himself a Chicano at all.
No. No, not at all.
So I would agree with you that, like, if I would probably think that the first migrant the first generation of children born here might consider themselves Latinxes or Latinos. Mm-hmm. And then the next generation would probably be, like, especially from the Southern California, would be Chicano, because there was there's a deep culture.
Yes.
And especially during the 80s and 90s, 70s, I have to go back, like, even when it was that time when the Chicano movement, like with the education.
Yes.
And
during the
walking,
60s.
Yes, walking yes. out. That was where I would consider that generation starting to embrace that and take, because at one point I might think that it was almost like a racial slur or maybe might have been synonymous with, you know, lower class people.
Right, right. And a lot of times people want to relate, like, the zoot suits during that time
yes.
as something racial as well. Yeah, we have a huge, rich history in our Chicano culture. Mm-hmm. Huge. It goes way back. Civil rights, working hand in hand with, you know, the Brown Berets, working hand in hand with the Black Panthers. I mean, we have a huge history, and we really more know about it along the West Coast. Even some of the music, reggaeton, a lot of that stuff, all that blending of music, you know, of rap and all that stuff, that all comes from, you know, in the inner city, in the housing projects and stuff, where Latinos would be with African Americans and it would blend together, and we would come out with our own rich, beautiful culture and music and art and colors. And so, yeah, I love to see the differences. Even though we don't have so much of that here in Northwest Ohio, we're a little bit different in that area.
You know, I've always wondered why, like, it looks like, like you said, the West Coast always has the Chicano movement. Any type of Latino, mm-hmm. Hispanic movement usually comes from California or the West mm-hmm. Coast. I've always wondered why, you know,
yeah.
and I'm sure it has to do with the amount of Latinos in California, right?
Well, it has to do with that, but it also has to do with the fact that, you know, most of California was actually Mexico. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at California, Arizona, Colorado, all of those states that it took the Guadalupe Treaty. But it was actually that purchase after the Guadalupe, because the Guadalupe Treaty was just the end of the war. But it took the purchase then to happen because Mexico was so in debt to the U.S. that they ended up selling all of those pieces. And so those are all actually, when we say, like in my family, we're from Texas, the southern border, Laredo, we say the border crossed us, we didn't cross the border, because that is what happened during that purchase and during that time.
And before we get to talking about our second guest, Michelle, I have one last question for mm-hmm. you, Lucy. How welcoming were the Hispanics in Toledo when you moved to Toledo?
Ooh. That's a good Ooh. Question.
Don't name names.
Spill the dirt, though.
Well, so where I live, and I still live there to this, from when I moved here, I live in the same house, the same neighborhood, the same community. So I am Catholic. I have the Catholic. I grew up in the Catholic faith, and so our church has a service every Sunday at 1 p.m. So I didn't really get into the Latino community until I started, you know, finding them. It took a while, but they were very welcoming. Even though I was an outsider because I was from a different part of the country, I was also an outsider because I have a really thick accent when I speak Spanish. So I kind of had, I got really excited when I was at Walmart or a store, I would hear people speaking Spanish, my cart would follow. And so I had to kind of like establish those relationship, that trust, because of the fact that I didn't speak Spanish without an accent. Mm. So a lot of the communities are so close-knit. And you would think that they don't know each other, but if you have people, where I am at, it's Fulton County, there are communities spread out the whole county, but they all know each other. Mm. Everybody knows everybody, or at least they know who's who and who came from where.
Right.
And, you know, it's nice to see that. And then you see your established families who have been here for a couple of generations. Mm-hmm. And
what generation are you
at? Right. So with them, it was easy to interact with them more, but I also got a little bit disheartened because you see as the generations go on, they lose that capability to speak their parents' mm-hmm. native tongue or their grandparents' native languages. Mm-hmm. So it was very welcoming. It did take a little bit of time to gain that trust and to kind of like have that door open because of, you know, there was two different, like same community, but kind of like different cultural insight. You know, those who were here for many generations are more integrated. They they kind of are that generation of, like, and I hate to use this word, but like Yo No Sabo generation.
Yep. Yep. We've had a few people mention that on the show.
The No Sabos.
Yeah. But it's a true generation.
And, it is.
Yeah. And not really to make, you know,
light
fun
of it.
Yeah. But there are, especially here in Northwest Ohio, there's a lot of people that are Latino that don't speak Spanish, you know, and when they do, we kind of call it like an Appalachian Spanish or something, you know. They haven't been formally taught to speak it. It's kind of like a broken Spanish.
Yes.
You know, but I travel a lot and I hear broken Spanish all over the place. You know, I go to Puerto Rico and they chop off words. I go to the DR, they chop off words, you know. So everybody has a blend of how they speak, so.
And if I may touch on that really quickly.
Yes, please.
Can we just talk about for a moment, like, the fact that earlier generations, when they were here, it was not encouraged to speak Spanish. At home, you would speak Spanish, but my father actually spoke to us in English, and he learned English and to the point to where he didn't have an accent, so he wanted us to speak English. My mom, on the other hand, who had broken Spanish, learned how to speak Spanish and spoke to us in Spanish, so I grew up speaking both English and Spanish simultaneously, but not everybody had that luxury, I guess, because of people who migrated here wanted their kids not to be judged on their accent or the fact that they spoke a language that was not acceptable here and still is frowned upon, I think.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, could you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah. So my name is Michelle Zaroux. I currently work for the Sisters of St. Francis and as a Chief People and Culture Officer and Deputy General Counsel, which is a big title. But I grew up in Michigan, actually. I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, and my parents were immigrants, and so I'm first generation born in the U.S., in case you're wondering. And
she's first gen.
Yeah, I'm first gen, you know, of that generation. So my parents are both immigrants from Palestine. My dad immigrated with his family in the early 1950s. I always joke that my dad's father, my grandfather, was like the first immigration lawyer in our family. I'm the second. But he was never a lawyer or I don't even think finished high school. But he just figured out the system and got his family and his brother's family and his other's family. And he helped, you know, dozens of people come to the U.S. And he started a store in downtown Detroit. And so my dad grew up in Detroit and then gradually moved into the suburbs. So I was born in a suburb of Detroit called Northville. My mom's family actually her house was really where Tel Aviv is now. I mean, she was forced out of her home in 1948 when she was 5 years old. And so her family packed a truck. They had a kind of family compound where there were four houses and they all went in together on a truck and drove to Amman, Jordan, where they had family. So she ended up being raised in Jordan instead of her home because she could never go back. And in fact, they were told they could go back after 15 days and they were never allowed back.
Right.
To the point where my grandmother didn't even pack her jewelry because she thought they were coming back and they were told it was temporary. So, so that's a real strong part of our family lore and something that I've always grown up with. But yet at the same time, what you were saying about language really resonates with me because my mom was so excited to be an American and to come to America. She had worked in the U.S. Embassy. She worked for USAID, actually, when she left high school because her English skills were so good. And she was so excited to marry an American man. Like, my dad was American by that point and learn English. So when I was young, she spoke to me in English and my parents spoke to each other in English unless they wanted to talk about something that they didn't want us to know about. And so really, I wasn't raised speaking Arabic. And to this day, I can't speak Arabic except for the patchwork of, I know this word and I know that word because she was wanting to learn English through talking with us.
So do they have a word in you know?
Yeah, like, in Arabic for...
Yeah, like the No Sabo.
No, they just ridicule us.
Well, but right now must be
I like that word. I want to kind of find a way to adopt it.
Well, today is a really trying time then for a lot of the family that, you know, where you're...
Yeah.
You know, are your parents still alive? Are they witnessing what's happening currently today?
My dad passed away in 1986, so he has not been around to see any of this, but my mom is still alive, and my family is devastated to hear about what's happening, especially in Gaza. We don't have relatives in Gaza, but in the West Bank, there are more and more incursions on the West Bank, so every time we start to worry, because my dad's city is Ramallah, which is where used to be the headquarters of the PLO back in the day, but that's a city in the West Bank, and so every day it sounds like it's coming closer to where we still have family, and so you know you just
live on the
edge.
Well, the West Bank has been hit for a long time.
A long time, yes.
Yeah, and I think that there hasn't been enough education and news coverage to allow people to know that.
Yeah,
we have Gaza that all of a sudden took off, but it kind of ignored a lot of the other things that were happening around there for a very long time. The Lebanese over there, it's been a rough road.
It's been rough, and the people in Ramallah, have been a little bit insulated from it, but they're still experiencing a lot of the effects of what happens in the settler areas around in the West Bank. So, I think that they fight every day.
Yeah, that's
so sad.
They really
do. And so when I went to college and ended up in law school, I really didn't go with the intent to become an immigration lawyer. It kind of happened by accident because I moved to Toledo for my job to work with Shoemaker, Lupin, Kendrick, the law firm downtown. And I was in the employment and labor department, and I always wanted to do kind of civil rights work. But I thought, well, this is a good way to pay off my student loans while I try to learn this stuff, And then our immigration lawyer left, and we had a contractor come in, and cases were getting messed up. And so a senior partner came to my office, handed me like 25 files that were all screwed up and said, fix this. Mm. And so that's how I learned to practice immigration law. I just started one by one and figured out how to be an immigration lawyer. But it really resonates with me that to do this work, because of my history, because of what my family went through, it's important to me. So I've been able to turn my immigration law practice into advocacy with Welcome Toledo Lucas County.
Nice. Well, I'm going to look forward to talking a little bit more. I have some other questions in my head that I'd like to dive deeper into for both of you. So,
yep. So we'll be back after this short break. Welcome back, everyone, to our second segment of La Prensa Habla. This is Kevin Salinas.
And I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Adse. So I wanted to go back into the conversation and the welcoming initiatives that we were just getting ready to go into. Mm-hmm. You were telling us a little bit about your life and then why you were getting into the welcoming initiatives. So if you can you tell us a little bit about what the welcoming Welcome Toledo Lucas County initiative is here?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you. Welcome TLC, as we like to call it, is a welcoming initiative that is certified welcoming by an umbrella organization called Welcoming America. And it really formed in probably 2014, driven by Lucas County. The Pete Gerken staff member, Brittany Ford, was put in charge of spearheading this welcoming movement.
Yeah. And I was going to interject just a little bit, only because I brought the welcoming initiatives to Lucas County.
You did?
I did, through the city of Toledo when I was through the Board of Community Relations. At the time, welcoming initiatives were only with the cities.
Yeah.
And when I was working for the mayor, it was brought to...
What year was that?
It was under Mayor Bell. So around the same time that you're talking about. Yep. And so when we bring it, it's brought to us because the nation's doing this whole welcoming initiatives thing. I then get with Brittany, and Brittany and I decide, why don't we make this where it's, that's why you have the Toledo and Lucas County in there. We're one of the first ones to be able to do that. And, it was just city, really.
Yeah.
But we bring it and we take it to both the both Lucas County and the city. Brittany and I worked together on this because initially, really,
predating me, so I had no idea.
And but really, I wanted to do sanctuary. And that was why. And my push was really for sanctuary. It was the county then that said, and I had the support from the city to do that, but the county had said they had preferred to stay with the welcoming, because if you would have went sanctuary, and we'll have that discussion here, there's negatives mm-hmm. to that in regards to funding mm-hmm. and collaborations and stuff. So we go this way. Brittany and I write a grant. We get with the Welcoming America. We write a grant. We go to Atlanta. We get some training. We bring that back. She continues to do it, and then I branch off of that, and then they have the committee that continues to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's really then how that started. But then, yeah, it looks like that it's
started
that,
with
but it
kind.
Really started with the city, just to give the city some
No, that's
props.
Great. I'm happy to know that history. And you know, I really got brought in after it was already well underway, and because I didn't join till maybe late 2014. Mm-hmm. But Brittany didn't do it alone also, because she partnered with LISC, Local Initiative Support Coalition.
Is
that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And Sarah Allen. So between Brittany Ford and Sarah Allen, they did the certification mm-hmm. for the county at that time. And then I was kind of brought in. I don't think we were quite certified, but they were working on it when I was brought in to join what was at the time a steering committee. Mm-hmm. And so we were really just advisory to them about what the community needs were at that time. And then I ended up serving as co-chair of the steering committee with Giselle McDonald, now McDonald. And then and then when they moved it along to what it is now, they changed their committee structure to more of an advisory committee, and then I ended up chairing that later too.
Yep. So currently now it's housed at the downtown library. Yep.
So for somebody like me who has no idea what Welcome Initiative is, how is this organization or program resourceful?
So what welcoming really is about really recognizing the value of immigrants to our communities, mm-hmm. integrating them more fully into the fabric of our community, and really recognizing the economic opportunities that they bring and how much value they do help and how they offset population loss that we see in our cities to a great extent. And now even in our rural areas, a lot of immigrants were offsetting the population mm-hmm. loss there. So recognizing all those things, the goal is to ensure that immigrant communities are welcomed into our government structures and that they are a part of the fabric of it at a deeper level than just saying we welcome immigrants, but to make sure that they have access through language access, they have representation on important committees, that they are really truly a part of equitably a part of whatever the government does. Mm-hmm. So it's, to me, it's part advocacy, because we do tell immigrant stories and we do use our platform to, you know, promote immigrants, but it's also about ingraining these structures into the fabric of how our government works.
I like how you mentioned that, because when you think about anybody, right, when anybody thinks about welcoming, if you put in a sentence welcoming and immigrants, people automatically go to open borders.
Yes.
Right. So really diving in and explaining what these organizations are will just help the audience understand what they bring to the table.
Right. Mm-hmm. And all immigrants bring that to the table, regardless of their status, whether it's lawful status or not lawful status. They are here. They are spending money. They are contributing to our economy. They are part of our tax base. They are billions of dollars into our tax base. And it is to our own peril as a community if we do not recognize that and support that. Mm-hmm. They are propping up our own government because of the amount of money they inject into the community and into our tax base.
Yeah. It's really a philosophical view. Mm-hmm. So Cosmopolitan looks at more the open borders. Those are the people that have that philosophical thing mm-hmm. that we are all connected. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be really any borders. We have the autonomy. We have the independence. We have the freedom. I mean, that's what we fought for, to be able to move about and to go past borders. And especially if we're being harmed, because then you have the ability to plead for asylum, which is also something that we've worked hard to protect, that if you're at war, if you're you have famine, if, you know, you have some natural disaster that occurs, that you would be able to then go into another, to someplace else and plead, you know, your case to be able to come in. So a lot of people like to look at that like it's a bad word, it's a negative word, mm-hmm. but it's really another frame of thinking about things, just like welcoming is, and just like I was asking about the sanctuary, because then sanctuary has also become another word that I feel that has been very almost misused.
It's been maligned.
Yeah, because sanctuary, even if you were to look at the Bible, the churches are to be sanctuaries. And so if you look at a lot of the immigrant right groups, most of them come from churches. Most of them have church faith-based people. We believe in, you know, if you're thirsty, we give you water. If you're hungry, we give you food. If you need a place to rest, we give you that rest, that sanctuary. This is all biblical. So this all predates all of us. If you think migration and immigration, that's in the Bible. Mm-hmm. That comes way back. This isn't a new thing. You know, so this is all these are all the nuances that I think we fight, the barriers that we fight. So do you see this over at La Conexión in Bowling Green? Do you see a lot of people, you know, going back and forth on the whole sanctuary and welcoming and what are you doing and what are you not doing?
Yes. So for us right now at La Conexión, what we say is that La Conexión is just kind of like that first connection that people make when they first come to our county or our Northwest Ohio. We are like that resource hub. You know, people come to us when they think that they need, like, so if they need access to healthcare, they need help navigating the education system, they need help how they would apply or look for work. So what we do is that we might not have welcoming in our mission or in our title, but we are a welcoming organization in the fact that we service people and guide them or navigate them through the systems and connect them mm-hmm. to the services that they need.
And you're holistic in that you do the whole family, because I know that you have English classes there.
Yes. Yes.
And I've been in there where I see small children in there as well. So you can
We do have a program, an ESL program, but we also in tandem have our tutoring program, which is Los Niños Nuestro Futuro, which is the children our future. Mm-hmm. So while parents are going and attending ESL classes, their children who are students would have like that academic tutoring where they have help with homework, mm-hmm. And then healthy snack, water, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you're learning, you need to have
And honestly, shout out to ESL, because that's how I learned English.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yep, they would take
you are an English as a second language,
yep.
ESL, that's
yep,
what that
would,
stands
they
for.
Would, yeah.
I just want the listeners to know, that's all.
They would take me out, I think it was like 1 or 2 hours every single day in school, and take me to the library, teach me English, and so shout out to ESL.
Mm-hmm. Really? See, I was a pull-out kid, too, but I'm not about doing pull-out. I would like to see all of the schools be like Escuela Smart here in Toledo, we incorporate two languages. Almost every other country in the world, you know, multiple languages,
right.
Except for here. I think that it would be nice to be able to incorporate, because I feel like when you pull a kid out, then they kind of feel like, you know, well, what are the rest of the kids doing? You know, why do I have
it's
to get
stigma.
Pulled out? It is, and it puts a stigma with them. Mm. Yeah, so I have some little, you know.
You know, if we go back to what we were talking about, No Sabo, right? No Sabo kids.
The No Sabo generation.
I love that.
You know, Lucy, you said you know, something along the lines of, like, you know, lots of parents, and it seems like lots of parents back in the day, they would migrate and they wouldn't teach their kids Spanish or their native language. And Everybody had their own reasons. I think one of the main reasons or the main driving forces was fear, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think they thought about, like, how incorporated the Latinos and the Hispanics would be in United States as we are now. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes,
You know, so how does Welcome TLC or La Conexión outshine, like, or reach out to those people that are looking for those welcome initiatives, especially when you know, we always talk about history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. Seems like today in day and age, there's people living in fear again about, you know, being out in the streets because, you know, because if you're Latino, you're automatically profiled.
Racially profiled,
yes.
Yeah. Although it's really ethnically profiled because Latinos are not a race. Mm-hmm. We're actually an ethnicity.
If I may, at La Conexión, we have seen in the last year and a half a drop in our attendance in our tutoring program, our ESL program. We still get phone calls, but now people are more like, you know, it's heavier on the immigration help, or, you know, I don't want to, I'm afraid I need to figure out, like, what can I do? But it's, these are people who have families that we service are mixed statuses. So,
right. And mixed status means that the family will have some members in the family that are U.S. citizen, some that are undocumented, maybe, or some that have temporary protection status who are allowed to be here with temporary protection status. They are not undocumented, or as others would call them, illegal. We actually call them irregulars in our area.
And adding on to that, the way things are going, some of these mixed status families are they're changing. Their status is changing, not because they did something wrong or because they lost their papers. It's just policies are changing.
It's the rules change in the middle of the game. Tell everybody it's like a football game. Would you be happy that we moved the goalpost in the middle of the game and said, oh, hey, now you got to make it over there? No, we would be upset about that, but we're okay with it with people's lives. Mm-hmm. We're okay that we changed the rules in the middle of it and said, all of a sudden, we gave you the right to be here, but now all of a sudden, you don't have the right to be here anymore.
So, and then going on that, like, so we saw a drop in attendance. We saw a drop in people being there physically, but the calls never stopped. The emails never stopped. People still need help. They still need services. But whether their status is one way or another, there's still fear among Latinos immigrants or migrants who, like, even if they have their documents and or their natural citizens, they don't want to go outside. They don't want to go outside because of the color of their skin, the way their last name sounds, the way their accent is, or if they can't speak English perfectly.
And this isn't just the Hispanic community. I hear this from tons of people.
Yes.
My own friends are afraid to travel because they are naturalized citizens. And they are not necessarily from one community or the other.
Right. Yeah. I know many people that are naturalized citizens or even born here that have had to go to Detroit to, you know, Homeland Security and have to check in and prove it and bring their children and stuff. And they have their papers, you know. It's turning on everybody right now, on everybody.
I would just like to answer that question from the perspective of Welcome TLC as a joint government organization that is the county, the city, and the Toledo Public Library. When you hear messages from Welcome Toledo, Lucas County, like, you are welcome here, and we're showing, highlighting the great value that immigrants bring, then I think it makes you feel, I have to think as an immigrant and as, you know, a child of immigrant myself, you're less alone. Like, your community supports you, and they're giving you resources, and they're giving you ways to get information. Like, the reason we made these stickers that I'm pointing out that say you are welcome here with a QR code is because we wanted people to have information that about their rights without having to look around for it. Well, if it's on a QR code that anyone can scan with their phone, that's a good way to get information to a lot of people. So there are things like that we can do from a government perspective that complements what you're doing on the ground. And a lot of it is coordinating mutual aid and ensuring that we can help each other.
Right. And one of the things that people that probably don't know is welcoming the Welcome TLC here. One of the big things that it did was be able to push that if you receive federal funds, that you would have to provide things in their native language, you know, language access that wasn't there before. You know, we would have to find a translator. Mm-hmm. They would have to use their kids to translate, you know, and none of that is right to one, put that pressure on a child, but also to expect somebody to know legal or medical or, you know, all this other terminology. So that was the benefit of the welcoming initiatives, but also the benefit was to tell the stories in a positive light and to change the negative narratives, you know, to debunk some of these stereotypes that people have. And that's what they were charged to do.
When we come back to our third segment, we're going to break bread, but I would like to talk about or discuss how someone that's listening right now can help, right? How they could reach out to help the Latino community, the Hispanic community, so that, like you said, all resources align and we work together to make sure that everybody feels welcome. Yeah. So we'll be back.
Welcome back, everyone. Now to my favorite part of the show, which is breaking bread, being able to eat together. I think that's the most important part for our Latino culture and for us, because we like to eat. That's our socialization time. You know, that's what we do. And today's word is miedo. It's to have fear. And the reason that's the word of the day for us to learn miedo today, as we always are trying to teach everyone a Spanish word, is because a lot of the families are living in fear currently. And we want to give, put that out there and let people know that the miedo, the fear, it's real. And we want everyone to know that. And now I'll pass it over to co-host Kevin.
So this is Kevin Salinas. We've got some empanadas in front of us. But speaking of miedo, I did want to ask, right before we ended our second segment, I asked, how can someone listening today help through your organization, or how can they be resourceful if someone wants to reach out and help?
Mm-hmm. You want me to start?
Yeah. You can learn more from our Welcome Toledo Lucas County librarian, Melanie Douglas. Melanie Rebus Douglas, I should say. Mm-hmm. She is, her title is actually New American Services Librarian, but she is also essentially the executive director of Welcome mm-hmm. Toledo Lucas County. She's housed at the Toledo Main Library in Toledo, downtown on Madison, and she's an amazing wealth of information and is able to connect you with any real resource if you want to help volunteer. She's got a list. We've got a directory of agencies that work in the immigrant space. And another good resource, actually, I wanted to mention, because you mentioned language access, is United Way has the 211 line. And I think it's very little known that they offer live translation services through 211 for any purpose. It doesn't have to be for a government purpose. You can call 211 and say, I need a translator. In just about any language, they certainly have the main languages that we have in our area covered, and they will connect you with an actual live interpreter who can help make your conversation happen, and it's free. Mm-hmm. And the only downside of that is you may have to wait to get through to a 211 operator, but I think that's a huge benefit to our community that needs to be talked about more. But 211 can also connect you with resources and organizations looking for volunteers, and as well as Melly at the library, and certainly myself, or through our social medias.
Lucy, do you know Melly?
Yes, actually, I do. I
was because she's Filipino.
Yes,
Filipino. Yeah.
Yes, I was. Working in nonprofit, even though it's Wood County, Lucas, all our counties, we're all interconnected. Really, we all, even though it's competitive when it comes to like getting resources and funding. In the end, collectively, we all service people. Mm-hmm. And so that being said, how can you help if you're just someone who's just passionate about what can I do and you feel like overwhelmed? I think volunteering is one of the most precious things you can give is your time.
Yes.
And so, of course, at La Conexión, we're always looking for volunteers. We have events. We are at this time and point, we do have quite a bit of volunteers, which is great, and I love how people are coming together as a collective, and we're going to volunteer. But there's a lot of other places that you can volunteer at: Water for Ishmael, mm-hmm. local food pantries,
the Greater Toledo Newcomer Center, which is our refugee agency.
Yes,
And where is that one at?
That's on Talmadge and Monroe. in that weird shaped building that has the little drive through where you drive
and
under the building.
And who's heading that? I don't think I know much about that.
Greater Toledo Newcomer Center is under HIAS, which is the refugee agency, and they're essentially an arm. Yeah, HIAS is Hebrew Immigrant Alliance or something.
Right.
Yeah, and then but they're actually powered by the Jewish Family Services in Washtenaw County, Ann Arbor.
Okay.
And so that, because of all their loss of funding, that office is kind of the director, someone from Ann Arbor is directing the Toledo office, but the Toledo office is still providing English language educational classes. They are still helping people with driving, with learning how to drive. Mm-hmm. I just got a call asking me to help with that, and they are doing a lot of work with the people who are already here, even though they don't have the resources to bring in the new people besides white South Africans. That's all who's been approved. Yeah. So, but they really could use help. And they actually, I got a call yesterday. They're looking for people who want to help teach people to drive. So because Ohio tightened up on their laws on getting a license, you need actual hours with a driver or an instructor. So there's a lot of ways you can help. And I just want to say about the collaboration piece, La Conexión was really fundamental in connecting all of the service providers together. We had a convening that was held at the Sisters of St. Francis and our Franciscan Center, and all of the representatives from all the organizations working in the immigrant space, this was about 3 years ago, came together and convened meetings to talk about changing the narrative, making sure we're all speaking with one voice about the positive things immigrants do, sharing information about which group does and how do we not duplicate resources. And really, since that time, we have been in a much more collaborative space, and we all understand, well, oh, you have this issue, you should talk to this person. And we pass people back and forth. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you may compete for a grant, but at the end of the day, we are working together in a way that did not happen in my first 15 years here in Toledo. So I'm really proud of that work, and it was really driven by La Conexión.
I've been eating this empanada. I don't know
That's what happens when you put a whole bunch of Latinos together. We start talking and we forget we're eating.
But it is a very good empanada. I'm not sure how empanadas are made, but I'm going to share a quick story about at least how I grew up, right, and what empanadas remind me of. When you go to a house in Honduras, and I'm sure it's the same across all of Latino, all of the Hispanic countries. Usually they greet you with un café con pan, una empanada con pan, right? And it's a welcoming thing that we do to basically say, hey, come here, sit down, have a coffee, you're safe, you're family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it reminds me of. Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me, I wish I had a coffee with me, but that's what really reminds me of. And I think it kind of turned out perfectly that we're having empanadas, because empanadas are a sign of welcome, right? And they're a sign of, hey, sit down. Like I said earlier, you're safe. Let's talk. You're family, you know? So I guess I couldn't help but
that's a great observation.
Yeah, that is.
That is such a nice observation. Yes, Jesse?
I wanted to add. So when I would go visit my dad's side of the family in Mexico, they're actually from Jalisco. They were from a small village, but then they moved to Puerto Vallarta, which is like very touristy.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember.
I just got back from there.
I do remember, very beautiful place. Uh-huh. I do remember café con chisme. You know, like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody from the neighborhood would just come to the door, and my grandmother would invite them in, and it was always coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Café con leche, just and then offering. And I know empanadas, they're synonymous with not just Mexico and Honduras, but all Latino America.
Yeah.
So I remember having the sweet empanadas, like the pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my favorites were pineapple, so I'm just going to say pineapple.
Pineapple, yeah. Pumpkin.
Yes.
Yeah, the Mexicans, we make a lot of the sweeter ones. Yeah.
And so I do remember, and being like a pre-adolescent, be giving coffee with more milk than coffee, but still having coffee with the sweet bread, but it was empanadas, mm-hmm. and they're so good.
I think you can't overstate the power of food to community and to welcoming and to just cross cultures. There was a group in Toledo that was having dinners where they'd invite people from who were newly arrived to have dinner with them, and like they just have different people in and out of their house with different guests. I think Welcome TLC has recognized this because we have an ongoing series of cultural cooking classes. So we're trying to share the knowledge of different cultures' food. So empanada class would be great. But I think that there's just the number one thing when people talk about the immigrants that they know in their lives, and the number one thing you hear is they're so generous, they're so welcoming. You know, I hear that a lot about Arabs. Of course, in your community, it's the same. And I think it's the one common thing that connects us is the food. And it's the most powerful.
Well, it's also it's a trust thing, right? So the moment you cook for somebody, the moment you bring something to the table and say, hey, I invite you to eat with me, it's like an invitation. And the moment the other person accepts it and starts eating, it's a trust. It builds trust.
That's right. So it's like, hey, common ground.
Exactly.
And for those that are listening, an empanada is like a turnover. It's kind of like what we call up in the UP or up in Michigan, the north, a pasty.
It's like the Polish.
Even very similar. So the Polish have this because the Turkish and the Chinese were over in Poland. I've been in Poland, that's why. And I've gone to all their like museums, historical things. And so they were able to also do something. That's why you'll see the little dumplings or the, you know, a lot of similar food is you're like, oh, that kind of looks like an Asian, is because they did have the Asians over there. But yep, it's a turnover and it's stuffed. So it's like a dough on the outside, like almost like a half a circle, and it's pinched all along the edges and it's stuffed with something. Mexicans will like to stuff it and make it sweet. Other countries where that I've gone to, they'll put meat in it, like a ground beef, like the Cubans.
Picadillo.
A picadillo they'll put inside there. How do they do them over there in Honduras? Don't you have something similar?
I don't know.
No?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be there in a couple of weeks, I'll tell you.
Arabs have fataya, which is the spinach pies, the meat pies that can be stuffed with spinach, with cheese, with meat. But they're kind of in a pie form. These are sweeter. Those are more savory. But there is a dessert that's more of a pocket, if you will, you know, that's similar to an empanada in the Arab culture as well.
I have a question for both of you. Looking ahead, right, what gives you hope?
You want to go first?
So for me, like, so since we're talking about welcoming initiatives, for me is my hope is, what gives me hope is that at La Conexión, we know that our programs are welcoming, but welcoming doesn't just mean programs. It means the people, the neighborhood, the community. Because without, as Michelle had said earlier, without immigrants, we wouldn't be, especially in Ohio, because the population is shrinking. We wouldn't have that sense of community. We wouldn't have these different ideals and coming together and helping each other. So it's ever changing, right? Welcoming doesn't mean just here you go, here's a packet, here's a little bit of information, go along your way. It's, you know, services, community, the churches, libraries, and schools are becoming those safe havens for the newcomers. And so just being able to see how it's going to change, how we can come together as a community and be part of that change.
For me, it's the children. I have great hope for our future because of who our kids are and how thoughtful they are about these things that we assume they know nothing about. I had the opportunity a few months ago to give a presentation to a group of school kids who did a church retreat at the Sisters of St. Francis, and they have decided to do this every year because they just enjoy being around the sisters and the work that we do. And they always ask me to do a presentation on immigration. And I started off thinking, okay, they're anywhere from 12 to 20. So I thought, well, I gotta, you know, make it more simple, simplify this. And I wasn't maybe three sentences in before they started firing off questions to me that most adults hadn't thought of. Of like, how long, when they take people away, where do they go? And how long do they stay? And what happens to them when they're in there? And what do you think of this? Because I think it's wrong. You know? I mean, it was unbelievable that they were so informed, and they were mad. They were mad that our government was doing this to people, and they understood way more than I would have given them credit for. So the kids give me hope, and maybe not all of them are getting that kind of education, but a lot of them are. And then just seeing Minnesota right now and how the community has come together has just, every day it gives me hope. that the community matters if they speak as one voice.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was, I would like for us to answer that too. And that's one of the things I was going to say. You know, what gives me hope is I see all the people stepping up, all the organizations and community stepping up, all of the leaders, you know, because sometimes like us as Latinos, when we're attacked, for lack of a better term, you know, we shut down and we just let it happen, you know, but seeing all the leaders step up really gives you hope that, hey, you know, there's people out there that want to protect us.
I get hope when I go to events as I did a couple days ago in Springfield, Ohio.
I wish I went.
Yep. Enter into that church. There's 1,000+ people inside there of all colors, religions, socioeconomic status. I mean, huge blend. The fire marshal had to come in and we had to shave off. We had to send home 300 people because we were way over capacity. Mm-hmm. That gives me hope. That gives me hope to be able to see white people at the front line taking it up for us, because for so long we hadn't had that for us to come together. I get that hope when I see almost the civil rights rising back up again. And when I was over in New York and I was watching the new mayor being inaugurated and I'm watching hundreds of people just coming, just taking over all of Brooklyn Bridge and walking hand by hand, hundreds after hundreds after hundreds, to come and see this new era in New York City. Yeah. That gives me hope when I begin to go around the nation as I travel and as I, you know, attend events, and I'm seeing just waves and waves of people coming in and saying, you know, enough is enough.
Yeah. And the federal judges really give me hope, because they are applying the rule of law that the government is trying to erase. And they are like the last bastion against the erasure of our rights. And they're really doing a heck of a job. And if you knew how many habeas petitions are pending in federal court, you would understand the job they're doing.
Yeah.
And I have one more question before we have to wrap up. And we've only got a couple of minutes, so if you could keep it short. I always do this. What do everyday neighbors need to understand about the role when it comes to welcoming?
That's good. Let's like build the nest, right?
Know
your neighbor's rights. Know your role. Mm-hmm. You know what you can and cannot do when you're witnessing something or you want to document it. Know that you can provide a meal for your neighbor, provide a ride because they're afraid to go out. You know. Know that you can volunteer at an organization like La Conexión or Welcome TLC.
We speak of Build the Nest because that's the training I do with Brittany Ford, and we've done for La Conexión and a lot of other groups. But essentially that is for nonprofits and agencies to provide support to people who are at risk, and so that they know their rights as well as the rights of the people who are at risk. So Lucia is totally correct. It's knowing that you can offer mutual aid. That means buying groceries, going out and driving kids to school that need a ride to school. And you can be educated about the law, and you can be educated about what's happening, and you can speak out, and you can also be telling the positive stories of immigrants and be the part of the narrative change by always talking about the good that immigrants bring to your life personally.
Yep. And that's exactly what La Prensa tries to do, and what La Prensa Habla is trying to do, is get that Latino voice out there and try to change the narrative and get as much information and education as we can out there. So we're very grateful for WGTE to allow us to have this platform.
Definitely. And thank you both for coming on and speaking about what needs to be heard. And thank you, Linda, as well. That wraps up this episode. My name is Kevin Salinas, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.